This is CliffCentral.com.
Ezizweni. Sanibonani nonke, everyone. Welcome to Frankly Speaking. You haven't heard me sing in ages, but don't worry. I was just resting the vocal cords so that I can come back bigger, better. Welcome to Frankly Speaking. My name is Rory Shabalala. Going to be with you for the next hour discussing South Africa's and the world's hot potato political and socio-economic issues. I'm flying solo today. My mate Andrew is not in, but we have quite a show lined up for you as always. Today we're discussing, frankly speaking, should South Africa hold an early election? Should South Africa hold an early election? In case you have missed it, the Democratic Alliance, South Africa's official opposition party, has called for an early election. This is after Jacob Zuma, the president, survived a motion of no confidence, the eighth one since he took up his position as president, and not wanting to waste even a single moment, the DA immediately then called for an early election. This is possible if it's been 3 years since the last election. It is very possible to have an early election, and as such, the DA has decided to pursue this. So we've decided to investigate a little bit more what this means. They have launched an entire petition. They have filed a motion. They're ready to go. They want this man gone. But it raises big questions, I guess, for us as South Africans, and I guess for the DA, for example. What does this mean for democracy? You know, democracy dictates that you go to the polls, we vote, and if you lose, then tough luck. But the DA seems to have other things in mind. You have a situation where the ANC is saying the DA does not respect democracy, because if they respected democracy, they would have surely waited for the elections to come in 2019. Why is it that they can't wait? Why is it that as they lose election after election, they can't simply continue competing in those elections, and they continue rather to seek other ways to remove the president? The ANC has called it an attempt at a coup d'etat, removing a democratically elected government in ways that aren't necessarily constitutional. But the vote of no confidence was a constitutional measure, and of course even this motion to call an early election would be a constitutional measure. They seem to be following all of the constitutional provisions. Our democracy seems to still be intact, because they aren't organizing an army. They aren't doing anything of the sort. They are instead pursuing all of the avenues that are available to them in the constitution. But of course, the question is, after losing 8 votes of no confidence, why in the world would you continue to do this? Are you sore losers, and so on? So this morning we have the chief whip of the Democratic Alliance in the National Assembly, John Steenhuisen, honorable member John Steenhuisen, in parliamentary parlance. He'll be joining us, and we're going to put all these questions to him. Good morning, John. How are you?
Yeah, fine, thanks, and you?
Great, thanks. Thanks for joining us, John. We've heard, of course, in the past 2 days you have launched this petition calling for an early emergency election. Can you just explain it to us? What is exactly this early election that you're calling for? What exactly does it entail?
Sure. Section 50 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa says that a parliament may dissolve and fresh elections be held, provided that 3 years have passed since the last election. Obviously, we believe that given the fact of what has happened, and particularly the events in the House 2 weeks ago, where the ANC chose to once again protect and defend President Zuma despite the several findings against him and the terrible details that have emerged over recent weeks of the its elites, that it's time now for the South African people to have a say on the future direction of South Africa. The Constitution specifically provides for this, where a president or a government has lost the faith of the voters and of people within that party. And I think that's very clear that the rebellion of over 30 of President Zuma's own MPs on the government benches not only unprecedented, but shows very clearly that there's a need for desperate change in South Africa.
Why do you feel that in spite of the motion of no confidence vote, South Africans haven't expressed themselves? Does that vote mean nothing in terms of the will of South Africans?
No, because it's very clear that those people in Parliament that voted in favour of President Zuma were acting to protect not only their own careers, but to protect President Zuma. I think that what we've seen in the course of the last year is a massive outpouring of ordinary South Africans putting aside their political differences, their religious differences, and coming together in huge numbers, numbers that we haven't seen since in the post-94 democratic South Africa, coming out on the streets, huge marches, calling for President Jacob Zuma to go. Veterans within his own party calling for President Jacob Zuma to go. The alliance partners in President Zuma's own ruling alliance calling for President Jacob Zuma to go. And yet none of these calls have been heeded. And so the judiciary have had an opportunity to have their say. I think MPs have had an opportunity to have their say. Church leaders have had an opportunity to have their say. But the people who haven't had their say yet are those that matter most in democracy, and those the voters. And we believe that an early election would give them an opportunity to be able to pass judgment not only on President Zuma, but also on the party that's protected him, and also would head off, I believe, us heading towards this terrible fiscal cliff later this year, where we face prospects of ratings downgrade as President Zuma and his cabinet drag the country's economy further and further towards the abyss.
John, let's test the logic of what you're saying just a bit, because in Mogale City, there was a motion of no confidence, I think, that was passed there, and the Democratic Alliance is said to have then instituted lie detector tests. What was that about? Was that now about subverting the will of the people? Was that not a similar attempt by the ANC to say, look, you were supposed to have voted along party lines and you didn't, and we want to try and find out who did it?
There's a very big difference, I think, between voting for budgets and for voting for programs and voting in a motion of no confidence against a president who has been found guilty by the Constitutional Court, the highest court in the land, and in a constitutional democracy where constitutional sovereignty is important. And to compare that with a vote at a mayoral level, I think, is comparing apples with pears, unfortunately.
The principle not the same, John, in the sense that you're asking councillors to vote on party lines, whereas they can't vote according to their conscience.
The principle is not the same. The principle here is that you have a president who has been found guilty by the Constitutional Court of the Republic of South Africa of violation of his oath of office. There is a clear reason for his removal. In the instance of the mayor of that particular municipality, there was no reason for his removal. He had not been found guilty by any court. He had not acted as through acts of omission or commission to put that municipality in jeopardy. He had not taken that municipality's economic well-being to the point of crisis. He had not dismissed members of his MACO at the expense of service delivery and of huge amounts of jobs. So I think that we're dealing with two completely different categories of cases here. Now, had that mayor been found guilty by a court of law of having broken faith with the people of that municipality, I think it would be a different matter altogether. But here, the Constitutional Court basically took sovereignty and said, well, look, you know, we have found the president guilty of these acts of omission and commission, but we can't remove him. It's over to you, Parliament, to now do your job. Parliament has failed in that job. And that's why we're saying the voters must be given an opportunity.
John, how would this early election happen? Take us lay people into the parliamentary processes. What goes on in order for this early election to happen?
Well, what would happen is a motion would have to be passed in the National Assembly. It would require 50% plus one, so 201 votes in the National Assembly to pass. What that would then would trigger Section 50 of the Constitution, which says that within 90 days, an election would have to take place. And so South Africa would then, within 90 days, have to go to the polls. They would then cast their votes in the ballot boxes. Those would then be tabulated, and you know, the results will fall where they may. But I think that, you know, you then have a purest form of decision making and accountability in the locus where it matters the most, and that's with votes.
Is there no tension that you feel, and this is just really about the reality of the politics of the country, in that if anything like that was to succeed, the country might just go up in flames. Understood that maybe the next 2 years of Zuma is also going to cause that, but does that not present a tension that any normal South African who just wants peace would be worried that any such thing, because South Africans, one can argue that a lot of South Africans aren't politically educated and we don't have civic education, don't understand our constitution, they could simply be riled up and motivated to cause riots and feel as if democracy has let them down.
Well, I disagree. I mean, I don't think too much democracy is ever a bad thing. I think where you've seen countries go up in flames is where democracy is itself subverted. And people feel that the democratic will has been subverted. And I think if you look at recent events in Kenya and other parts of the continent, that is where things have gone, you know, people have gone onto the streets and you've had problems where democracy is subverted. I don't think there's ever been a situation where you have people, you know, burning countries down where there's too much democracy. Precisely, people behave like that when they feel that their democratic will and the exercise of their democratic rights have been infringed upon. I don't think an early election will do that. What I do think will do that is another 18 months of President Zuma at the helm, pushing more than 9 million people into the unemployment queue, you know, taking the country to the brink of a ratings downgrade, which is now seems inevitable, you know, pouring more and more public money into failing state-owned enterprises. That is what's going to cause more social unrest, as more and more people are unemployed and can't find work. As inflation spirals, as food prices increase, that's what's going to get South Africans onto the streets. We believe that we can subvert that by having a democratic opportunity for voters to choose the future direction of South Africa, to be able to have the opportunity to close the chapter on the Zuma years and start writing a new chapter for South Africa.
John, you paint the ideal picture here, and that is in an ideal scenario where everyone understands, but you know quite well that the ANC came out when you announced the call for an early election. They came out and said you don't respect democracy. Now, the ANC is heard and believed by a lot of people, so it wouldn't matter what the reality is and what the ideal is. It would only matter what people believe. Do you believe that you are in a position to convince more people than not that their rights wouldn't have been trampled on? Yes, in reality and constitutionally, their rights would not have been trampled on, but do you think that the people would believe you?
Well, I think they would believe us because we're putting the choice in their hands. We're not having a bunch of politicians making the decisions for them. We're giving them an opportunity to decide the future direction of the country. The Constitution wouldn't have provided for this type of mechanism, you know, if it was to be, as the ANC are hysterically saying, regime change. Regime change happens through the barrel of the gun. It doesn't happen through a democratic election. And one wonders why the ANC are so petrified of going to an election, why they have reacted so hysterically to this, using language like regime change. It's because they know that they themselves are tearing each other apart. The government benches are so divided that you have members that can't even sit in the same room as each other. In parliamentary committees are now being jammed and unable to do their job. The Public Service and Administration Committee is a good example. It hasn't been able to meet because they've removed the chairperson, Makosi Kosa, and there's so much factionalism that it's stopping the people's business from being done. We need a reset. We need to give South Africans an opportunity to decide what that reset looks like.
John, take us into the strategic machinations of the political parties just ahead of the vote of no confidence, just as an indicator of how you would pursue getting the number of votes required in order to force this early election, considering that the opposition doesn't have more than a 50% plus one majority. How did you get it right the first time, and how would you go about getting it right this time, especially after the results of the vote of no confidence?
Well, I think it's important to remember, and I think it's important that people cast their mind back, when the Democratic Alliance leader, Muthu Maimane, first tabled the motion of no confidence, he was met with the same hysterical reaction from both commentators and from people within the political realm, saying, oh, well, you know, all you're going to do is, you know, unite the ANC around President Zuma, you know, you're going to force them to defend him, etc. Well, precisely the opposite happens, and we've seen the biggest government rebellion in post-democratic South Africa. So obviously it's going to be a lot of work. We've got to go and convince other parties, and we've got to convince people within the ANC that an early election could well be the precipitate of them being able to force out President Zuma.
How do you convince, John? Remember, we're just lay people. We're not in parliament. How do you guys do it? How do politicians convince each other?
I don't want to give away all the secrets, but, you know, there are meetings and that take place, and methods of persuasion and bringing people around to your argument. But, you know, the other thing as well, what strikes me as somewhat odd, is that, you know, some of the other opposition parties themselves have come out and said, oh, well, they don't support, which is odd. Mm. Because in the State of the Nation address earlier this year, Mr. Mosia Lekota called for an early election and Parliament to be dissolved. In November last year, when it was constitutionally impossible, Mr. Julius Malema tweeted that it's time for this Parliament to be dissolved and for fresh elections to be had, as did the UDM, Mr. Bantu Holomisa, earlier this year, say Parliament must be dissolved, early elections be called. We believe that, you know, that everyone has had an opportunity to cast judgment on the ANC and President Zuma, except the people that matter most, and those are the voters. So we've got to not only convince people in Parliament, but we'll then have to also go out and convince voters on the streets and on the doorstep, you know, why this is so important and why it needs to happen.
In case you've just joined us, you are listening to Frankly Speaking, discussing Frankly Speaking, should South Africa have an early election? If you want to participate in this conversation, by all means, please do. You can catch me on Twitter at Rory Shabalala. And of course, you can send us a WhatsApp message on 079-748-2090. We're here with the Chief Whip of the Democratic Alliance, Honorable Member John Steenhuisen. John, you're the one that's always causing trouble in Parliament, isn't it? You're the one that's that is constantly standing up on points of order. Is that you?
No, that is me. I wouldn't say causing trouble. That's making sure that things that run smoothly and according to the rules. I mean, I think that's the, you know, the role that chief whips play, and ensuring that the rules of Parliament are upheld and applied fairly.
Mm. John, how do you guys know? How does the Democratic Alliance? Because in the statement that you've issued, you say you believe that the ANC has lost the confidence of the majority of South Africans. How do you know this? How do you come about to that conclusion? Isn't the election the only way of determining that? Now, you're using this as a basis for calling for an election. How do you guys arrive at the conclusion that the majority of South Africans have lost confidence in the ANC?
Well, I think there's empirical evidence, and I think there's also anecdotal evidence. I think that if you look at anecdotally, the huge volumes of marches outside the union buildings, on the streets of the cities and towns across South Africa, unprecedented numbers of South Africans across all communities coming together. The scale of those marches have been massive. As I said to you, the ANC's own alliance partners and people within their own party, senior and influential people in their own party, saying we're going to get voted out of office in 2019 if this current trend continues. But then, of course, we also run polling operations, which give us a sense of where we sit with the electorate and where the ANC are. And as Muthu Maimane announced about a month ago, since we started tracking in South Africa, and we run the most sophisticated polling operation, the ANC have been consistently tracking below 50% for 5 to 6 weeks straight. It clearly shows that people are becoming disillusioned. And, you know, I think that if you just listen to the people who phone in on radio stations, you're seeing what's happening on TV, you listen to the veterans within the ANC, you listen to even some of the ANC's own candidates for the elective conference later this year. You start to get a sense that the ANC is a party in deep trouble that has broken trust and has lost faith of many South Africans.
So how would you then respond to the accusation that it's just political opportunism? You're seeing the polls where they are, and you just want to try and strike while the iron is hot. It actually has nothing to do with the broader South African agenda.
Well, we're not a social club or a country club. We don't get together in a party and talk about politics. The whole point of a political party is to be able to take power so that you're able to implement your policies and drive your policy agenda. That's what we've done in Cape Town, and now we're doing in the three metros in Nelson Mandela Bay, Tshwane, and Johannesburg. Mm. I mean, that is the point of politics, is to get power. So I don't think it should be frowned upon that a party, you know, is ambitious to get into office. We're ambitious to get into office because we see that South Africa needs this change, needs this reset so desperately. You know, life can be better for South Africans, but it's going to require tough choices, and it's going to require a complete shift in the way things are done. We can't continue on the current trajectory. It needs to be broken. It's heading towards the abyss. We need to arrest that slide. And we believe the best way to do it is by getting the ANC out of power and getting an opposition coalition together and getting into the union buildings so we can start to turn things around and improve lives for ordinary South Africans. We don't hide that. We're not ashamed of that. Mm. That's the whole point of political party exists.
John, just coming back to your examples of radio callers and marches, the marches, while significant, didn't notch up even a million people. And if you think about the elections in 2014, the ANC won 11 million votes. So how do you still just conclude that this is representative of the will of the majority? The DA got about 4 million votes. The ANC got 11 million votes. So even if it's lost some votes, it's not likely that it has lost the majority of those 11 million, or at least how do you come to the conclusion that it's lost the majority, which is what your statement says, on the basis of marches of, at most, 100,000 people, or let's say even more hundreds of thousands, and a few people that call in on radio stations? How does that then translate to saying the majority of people?
Well, as I said to you, it's anecdotal and empirical, and I think that the marches and the volumes of marches and the cross-section of people who have come together for those marches is a very good sample of the feelings and views of a far greater majority of the electorate. I spoke to you about the empirical evidence, which is our polling operation, which shows that the ANC has in fact lost its majority. And that's why we know without a doubt that the next election will emerge with a coalition government. Either way, it will either be an ANC-led coalition government or it will be a DA-led coalition government with other opposition parties. There is no way a single party is going to have a majority after the next election. And, you know, that's our polling shows that. And bear in mind, this is the very same polling that we used to project our win in Tshwane. Now, you may remember Mr. Gwede Mantashe was accusing the DA of witchcraft and all sorts of other things when we announced we had won Tshwane before the IEC had announced it. But we knew, and our polling information has predicted the last two election results into within 0.12%. Of the results. So we knew we'd won Tshwane by our polling operation. And, you know, this informs us and it shows us that the ANC is struggling to get above the 50% mark amongst voters. And this is voter samples across the board, not necessarily DA supporters, but ANC supporters themselves. The extensive polling operation that polls across all race groups and all income groups and all political groups.
What would a typical sample size be of such a poll?
Well, it's done very differently. There's a number of different types of polling that's done. There's obviously focus group polling. There's telephone polling. I don't have the figures on me. It's not the part of the party that I'm in charge of. I run the operation in Parliament. But it is significant and well within the international norms of what you would do to run effective political polling.
Speak to us just a bit about this opposition coalition. Again, as lay people, what would an opposition coalition look like, and how do you govern, and how do you deal with all of the criticisms that have been labeled or that have been put at opposition governments? We're seeing what's happening in Nelson Mandela Bay with that coalition government. what exactly, so take us back to just explaining what a coalition is and how it operates, how it governs, and then just dealing with some of the weaknesses of coalition governments that tend to actually not achieve much, and because they're spending all of their time trying to negotiate.
Well, look, I think that if you look back at the history of South Africa, very little has changed in South Africa except through coalitions. The ANC itself, government itself, is a coalition between the ANC, COSATU, and the South African Communist Party.
Except that the other two don't contest elections, which
is different. They're still a coalition because they exist and they have their own congress. So nothing has changed in South Africa. If you look back even to our terrible past, where you've had change, it's always been when coalitions have come together. Coalitions, of course, are not easy, and you've got to work at them all the time. You know, they are like a marriage, and those people who are married will know that a marriage requires work at it every single day. There are different personalities and, you know, different parties, but where they come together to coalesce around a common set of principles and goals that government wants to achieve, it can be done. And, I mean, if you look at Germany's most stable period of rapid economic growth and expansion was during the years of coalition between the Socialist Party and the Christian Democrats. If you look at large parts of Europe, for instance, many of the countries that are solely government coalition and have been for many, many years, and they're able to achieve growth rates, be able to employment and keep those economies moving. But, you know, it's not easy. I'm not saying to you that, you know, that coalition governments are a panacea in themselves. They are, and you've seen some of the difficulties that we've had in Nelson and Mandela Bay over the last weeks. But I think that Mr. Holomis himself has come and said, well, they're committed to the coalition still. Obviously there's some personality differences that occur. But I think that one of the things about a coalition government is that the parties then act as handbrakes on each other to ensure that, you know, and they keep each other honest so that no one party dominates or has a monopoly on the political direction of the country. And I think that's a good thing. I think that they act as checks and balances on each other. And so I'm quite excited about the future under coalitions. Of course, it would be great to be able to get into power with an absolute majority. But I think in the current political landscape, that's simply not possible anymore. No party is going to be able to achieve those numbers to be able to govern on their own in the future.
John, just to explain for us the brass tacks of coalitions. Who gets to be president? How do you make decisions? How do they in sort of very simple practical terms? How do coalitions operate?
Sure. Well, obviously, I mean, what you do is each party has to go out and, you know, set their stall out before the voters, and voters must decide, you know, which part of the manifesto, which party's manifesto they like, and they reflect that in the election results. Thereafter, you start a process of negotiation, and you start on the key principles around which you're going to coalesce.
So, by the way, this is only if none of the parties achieve 50%.
Only if none of the parties achieve 50%. You'll go into negotiations with each other to see how you can form a government. And obviously, that's where the horse trading takes place, and you know, not every party is going to get every aspect of their manifesto, realized, because it is a process of compromise. And it's in that negotiation where there generally is trading around who will take what position. The general trend, certainly internationally, is that the party with the biggest number of votes then takes, the presidency, and other cabinet positions are then dished out, according to the strength of the, of the other parties. There may be some, particular portfolios that a particular party who's driven an issue very hard in election may feel that they would like to take. But again, that's not a hard and fast rule. It all comes down to that negotiation. Generally what happens then, as we've done in the three metros, a coalition agreement is then signed, and the parties then build into that coalition agreement dispute resolution mechanisms to be able to deal with disagreements. Indicating that parties are also free to differ on certain issues, but when it comes to important things like confidence motions, budgets, IDPs, any particular big piece of legislation, parties are generally bind together to themselves in that agreement to make sure that those pass. So you give parties latitude to be able to still be themselves, because that's what a multi-party democracy is all about, but you do come together around sharing a set of common objectives that you wish to achieve over that five-year period.
Julius Malema has on Twitter said, "I can smell government of national unity because South Africans are sick and tired of one-party dominance." And then the EFF has seemed to do an about-turn on, or at least have not endorsed this idea of an early election. So how does that factor? It's confusing. He says he smells this, what you speak of coalition. Are they just seeing it in 2019, or is there something that you guys know that we don't?
Well, I mean, I think that we happen to believe that an early election is important and would give South Africa that very important opportunity for a reset to be able to prevent us, you know, heading off that cliff. Mr. Malema himself recognized that when he tweeted earlier this year around the need for Parliament to dissolve and for early elections to be held. You know, we obviously would hope
Changed? What's changed? Because that endorsement seems to have removed. Do you think they'd have preferred that they be the ones that advance it? What is it that has changed between then and now?
I'm not sure. I'm not a member of the EFF, and I'm not party to Mr. Malema's inner circle, so I'm not sure what would have changed his mind between his tweet and Mr. Maimani's call for an early election.
Except you just said to us that you continue to negotiate and talk. There must be something that you guys believe is happening that would allow for this to potentially be a success. What is it? Bring us into your confidence, John.
I don't negotiate with the other party. We've got a panel of people that negotiate at an ongoing level with the leaders, and it's generally the party leaders themselves that meet at least once a month to discuss matters of mutual concern and interest. And I've no doubt that Mr. Maimani will be setting out his case very clearly at the next meeting of these opposition leaders. But what we can all think, whether you're in the EFF or whether you're in COPE or the UDM or in the DA, you can sense the palpable need for change in South Africa. You can feel it. You can see that there's a hunger from ordinary South Africans for something different to happen, realizing that we can't continue on this current path of massive unemployment, huge deprivation, and a widening structural inequality in South Africa. We need change, and you know, people need hope that things are going to get better. If we don't have that, I really fear we're going to end up with the model you spoke about earlier in the interview, where you have people bursting out on the streets and taking out their frustrations, not through democratic means, but through other means.
You've issued a petition on this, where you're inviting South Africans to sign the petition. What would a petition achieve that all of our marches and 8 votes of no confidence have not achieved? What happens once you've signed a petition? Is there any constitutional provision that gives that petition any power?
Well, petitions are presented to Parliament in terms of Parliament's rules, and it is then obliged to be sent to a parliamentary portfolio committee by the Speaker to be debated and discussed. So it does two things. A, it gives an indication of the momentum and the sentiment and feeling, but there's also then a parliamentary process that follows once that petition is tabled by a member on behalf of all of those people, and then it forces and triggers a discussion on the matter in Parliament.
Do you need all those votes? Don't you guys already do that anyway without all of our signatures? What is there a specific thing? Is this separate to what you guys would normally do in the course of Parliament?
Well, on big issues like this, we try and get a huge momentum of people, behind a particular campaign or issue, to try and show that there is volume and support. So I sincerely hope you will be signing the petition and helping us to get this before Parliament.
Is the DA not losing support of those that might see it as sore losers? You went ahead, you tried the vote of no confidence, you lost, and now you're trying to do this thing. There's certainly, if you look at social media, there's been a turn of sentiment, even amongst people that were sympathetic on the vote of no confidence, to say, geez, guys, let it go. This thing isn't going to... We've tried, and we just now have to wait for 2019, or at least for the courts to find him guilty or something.
No, I don't think we're losing support at all. I think quite the opposite, actually. And again, I remind you about the same talking heads and the same chatter that occurred when we first tabled the motion of no confidence. And yes, we may have lost the vote, but sometimes when you lose, you win. A huge rebellion on the government benches. I mean, I don't think we can underplay or downplay the significance of those 30-something government MPs who rebelled against their own president. That is significant. And also what has happened now is that the ANC have taken full ownership of President Zuma. They now own Intandla. They now own the violation of the oath of office. They now own the Guptas. Because when you have ANC, you end up with Zuma. And when you have Zuma, you end up with the ANC. They're now coupled at the throat. And I think the ANC made a huge mistake. They had an opportunity to cut their losses, get rid of a president who has been found guilty by the Constitutional Court, implicated of making huge sums of money for him and his family and friends through the Gupta leaks. They had an opportunity to cut their losses. They chose to take ownership. They're now coupled at the throat. They're one and the same. You vote for one, you get the other.
Are you trying to get this done before the elective Congress? Do you think sentiment is then going to swing again when people realize that there's a new leader, maybe somebody that they feel is more credible at the ANC and potentially even as president of the country? Is this what it's all about, is trying to beat the ANC's elective Congress in December?
Well, obviously, I mean, the more that we can focus the ANC's mind about what's going into an early election would look like under a Zuma president, I think the more it sharpens their focus on how they need to do the right thing as a political party and, you know, get rid of President Zuma and start to write a new chapter for South Africa. So the more pressure we can keep up, I think the better it is.
We had Ralph Mateka on the show recently, just discussing some scenarios, and I just want to test them with you as somebody who is in the belly of politics in South Africa around what happens to President Zuma. Of course, he's facing the court proceedings. So if you can just tell us a little bit more about what's happening. I believe there's three different things that are happening in the month of September that might be definitive in terms of his future. There's also a scenario of let's say the early election, and we've discussed, we spent most of the show discussing it, and you feel that it might be a plausible way, a plausible approach. There is the approach that he goes and gets a proxy elected in December, ANC, and continues to govern from at least the grave. And then there's been talk, and Ralph thought this was a crazy proposition, but that there may be a state of emergency, conditions fomented for a state of emergency that would allow him to just acquire certain powers that could then see him overriding the Constitution in certain respects. What do you think about those different scenarios, and which one you think is most plausible?
Well, look, I mean, I think the first thing that President Jacob Zuma wants to do is to stay out of jail. I mean, he's facing, as you rightly say, a very tough month of September. There's a number of court cases. The 783 charges of fraud, corruption, racketeering, his appeal against that in the Supreme Court of Appeal, the impeachment in the Constitutional Court, and a variety of other legal skirmishes. But let's just look at those scenarios, as you say, Ralph has set them out. I think what President Jacob Zuma is desperately trying to do is to make sure that Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma is elected in December, because he knows that he has the best prospect of staying out of jail. It's highly unlikely that a former wife and mother of children is going to jail the father. And I think that is the best case scenario for him. The other option, which you speak about, is that, and it certainly there's some talk doing the rounds here in Parliament, in the corridors, around a forced collapse of the conference, which would see Zuma staying on under the pretext that he's the only man who can unite the ANC and keep it going forward. And then, you know, obviously pushing on that way. But either way, Mr. Zuma is not going to want to relinquish control of the ANC. Because what the ANC is now is not merely a political party. It is a multi-billion rand corporate operation with huge amounts of money flowing from the state, which is being subverted from service delivery and from serving the people of South Africa, into the pockets of a few wealthy individuals and connected cronies. They don't want those taps to run dry. Mr. Zuma doesn't want those taps to run dry. That is why it is essential that at all costs he holds on to power either through the proxy or by collapsing their conference later this year. His worst-case scenario is obviously somebody being elected who then goes after him and ensures that he is, you know, held accountable. But there's also the other talk around the so-called amnesty or an exit package being negotiated for Mr. Zuma. I think that the context and the consequences of that would be horrific for South Africa, essentially rewarding somebody who's, you know, behaved in the way that he has by giving him a huge financial payout and telling him to go off and sin no more. I think he does deserve an exit package, but the only exit package he deserves is an orange uniform where he can serve out his time for the criminal acts that he has committed, feminine ADC charges of fraud, corruption, racketeering, and he needs to face justice for those.
John, the EFF has said if the Democratic Alliance truly wants Parliament to be dissolved, all they need to do is to resign all of their members as well as their party from Parliament in terms of Section 46(1) of the Constitution, which states that the National Assembly consists of no fewer than 350 and no more than 400 members. What can you just explain this section to us and whether this is a plausibility and why you haven't pursued that rather?
Well, we haven't pursued it because it's a completely amateur and incorrect interpretation of that particular clause, as Professor Pierre de Force and a variety of other legal and constitutional academics have pointed out. It's a completely farcical reading of the section. All that section does is sets out the upper and lower limits for the number of members of the National Assembly. If a party withdrew or resigned, those would simply be reflected as vacancies. And you can have vacancies for a number of years in the National Assembly. It would make no difference whatsoever whether Parliament continued or not. Obviously, a situation would exist if you had, you know, 50% of Parliament resigning, because it would make it virtually impossible to sign laws. But parties resigning and bringing that number down to the numbers that you speak about would of below 350 would have no impact on Parliament whatsoever, and would certainly never trigger a dissolution of Parliament.
You speak about the signing of laws, and of course, we, with all of these things that happen in Parliament, we forget that Parliament's function is primarily to sign laws. Is all of this stuff not holding up Parliament's legislative agenda? How many laws has Parliament managed to pass in the past sort of year or two versus previous parliaments?
Well, I think that it's more what's blocking Parliament from achieving its goal is the ANC's infighting. This year, only six pieces of legislation have passed Parliament and been signed into law by the President. We have 32 pending pieces of legislation that are before Parliament, and it's highly unlikely, given the fact that we're now, because Parliament is now having to dance to the ANC's internal tune, so we had to have this long break so that they could have their policy conference. And so we've lost a huge amount of time to pass legislation there. And, of course, Parliament's definitely not going to sit past the 1st of December and probably will start to rise far sooner because obviously the ANC members want to get out onto the hustings and start agitating and mobilizing for their candidates ahead of the elective conference. So we essentially have 2 months window of legislative time left before the end of this year. To pass legislation. I don't see much legislation being passed, particularly given the fact that there's going to be a priority when we get back after the next recess of looking at the medium-term budget policy statement and the budget reports and annual reporting that's required from all the committees. So it's highly unlikely that we'll get through even 2 or 3 of those 32 pieces of legislation that we're having to process. And this is a problem, because as you rightly say, one of the 4 key things that the Constitution task Parliament is doing is passing legislation. We've been had an appalling year for legislation, but mainly it's the ANC infighting, committees that have not been able to meet because the members hate each other on that committee from within the ANC. You just only have to look at what's happened to the Home Affairs Committee, the Public Enterprises Committee, the Public Service Administration Committee. You just have a snapshot of how the ANC's internal politics have been so debilitating on the people's business. And that's one other reason why we're saying that, you know, the people's business is being frustrated. Let's go to an early election so we can elect a new parliament that can get on with the people's business.
What happens then in that time? So, for example, in this period where you're preparing for the motion of no confidence, does other parliamentary work continue, or does everything become focused on a big motion like this?
No, everything should continue in theory. But as you would know, the run-up to this particular motion of no confidence was fraught because of the infighting with the ANC. I mean, even ANC MPs coming out openly saying that they were going to vote with their conscience. There had been a variety of concerns. Of course, the run-up to the secret ballot announcement by the Speaker was fraught with tension. And obviously that has impacted on Parliament as well.
And what then happens if you lose at least this next bid of dissolving Parliament? Do you think that does not lose you the confidence of South Africans to say you keep trying and you keep defeating? I mean, strategically, being seen to be constantly defeated might actually result in what DA's attempts and DA's efforts being EFF's gains, maybe, where you are not seen as at least strong enough to win, whereas the EFF might be saying, we only take on fights that we feel we can win.
Well, I don't think that's the case at all. I mean, not a single EFF motion has passed the House since they've been in the House, not a single one. And I certainly don't think that that is the case. And I think if you look at the recent by-election results in central Johannesburg, where the DA came within a hair's breadth of winning that ward of the ANC, EFF trailing way behind in the lowest 6%, actually having lost some support from the last election. So I don't think that narrative is essentially true. I know it's a popular one among some talking heads, but it's not borne out by the facts. And again, the EFF has not had a single motion passed the National Assembly since they've been here. And the thing is that we've got to keep doing what we can do. Parliament, there's only two ways you can remove a president, and they both involve parliamentary action steps. Parliament has to be the arena we hold the executive accountable. And as I said earlier, sometimes when you lose, you may win. And I think that the last motion of no confidence has been a great win for the opposition. And I think South Africans can see and appreciate that we're doing all we can, both within Parliament and outside Parliament, to try and bring this hope and change to them.
President Jacob Zuma is just one part of what seems to be an entire web of problems for South Africa. So apart from what gets done in Parliament, what gets done about all these municipalities that have these qualified audit reports and all of the money that gets wasted, what other agendas are there? Are there similar things in motion at a municipal level that we never hear about? Provincially, what tends to happen? Because the focus tends to be primarily on National Assembly, whereas we also have the provincial legislatures and, of course, municipal councils. Can you give us a sense of how this the same energy to hold accountable is being translated into the other spheres of government?
Well, obviously, I mean, whatever forum we are, whether we're in opposition, we do our very best to hold the local government accountable. And if you look at what the great work being done by the DA in places like Etikweni, in Ekurhuleni, and other metros where we don't, we attempt to try and hold the government accountable. Unfortunately, you have all these bad audit results. They one day have bad headlines, generally, because we lack a consequence framework. Now, I'm very excited that the Auditor General is starting to talk about, having real consequences felt for those who do wrong and at a municipal and provincial level. But also to understand this, the web of state capture extends far beyond the union buildings, state-owned entities and government departments. It reaches out the tentacles into provincial government, as we've seen in the Freda Dairy matter, and into the heart of local governments as well. There are captured MAECO members in those municipalities who are doing the bidding of this vast network of mutually reinforcing benefits. That's tapping, money out from where it should be spent on service delivery and providing a sense of an accountable government to the people and into the pockets of these well-connected individuals that make up the network.
John, obviously, as just a normal South African that's not a politician, we look at this and we say, jeepers, you know, we've tried marching, we've tried, you know, supporting these motions of votes of no confidence. We've tried all we can, and of course you say you guys are politicians, you're not a social club, your job is to try and get power. Why should we as just ordinary South Africans remain engaged in this conversation? I mean, you guys will continue to seek power as politicians do, but why does this even require us? Because we just get to a point where we think, you know what, it doesn't help. We might as well just wait for 2019.
Well, I think that citizens have a choice to make in South Africa, and it's a very simple choice. We can be a quiet, reflective pool of all that's wrong in South Africa, or we can break that surface and be ripples of hope and change that make a difference in South Africa. And engaged citizenry is essential for the democratic well-being and health of any multi-party democracy. There is just too much at stake for any ordinary citizen to say that they're not interested in politics. They may not be interested in politics, but politics is very interested in them. And as people have seen, both whether you're standing in the unemployment queue, you're waiting for 4 weeks to get a identity document at a Home Affairs office, you're, you know, worried whether your social grants are going to be paid. Politics impacts on the ordinary lives of South Africans. Citizens cannot afford not to be engaged and participating fully in the process.
So what does that look like beyond marching?
Well, it looks like holding your public representatives accountable at a local, provincial, and national level.
How do we do that?
Well, you do it through attending your ward committee meetings, you're forcing your public representatives to have report back meetings, attending parliament, writing to your local representatives, holding them accountable, ensuring that they are representing your interests to the best of their ability.
As we prepare to sign off, John, and thank you very much for joining us, what does the future look like, or at least the near future, for South Africa? If this thing fails, what happens next?
Well, I don't want it to fail, and we certainly are doing everything we can to make sure it doesn't fail. I really, truly, passionately believe that the best days of South Africa still lie ahead of us, and that we've shown that even in the most difficult times, when we've stood together as citizens and South Africans, we've been able to pull off miracles. I still believe that we can have another miracle in South Africa. We can have hope and change. And that if we, you know, if we put our collective shoulders to the wheel, we can realize this country's amazing potential that it has to be the special place on the southernmost tip of this great continent.
And what do you say to people that say, but can we trust the DA? We've heard Helen Zille and the comments that she's made, and it remains a credible threat in many people's minds that the DA doesn't quite believe what we believe about the equality of people, even though it says it. We see the ANC doing things that are counter to what it says, so why not the DA?
Well, I think you've got to trust but verify, and I think that if you look at the areas that we govern, look at the track record of service delivery, particularly look at the Western Cape. Highest access to basic services, best housing delivery, best schooling provided, water and sanitation, by government's own reports, the best social service packages for the poor. You've got to trust but verify. And I think that where we do govern, and we've been given the opportunity to govern, people have been shown through physical manifestation that jobs are created, that, you know, life is better. And while it's not perfect, no, I don't think life is perfect under any government, things are certainly a lot better than they are in other ANC governed metros. And so take the opportunity, give it a try. What have you got to lose? Another 5 years of the ANC or a chance to change? There used to be a famous advert for Kane called Mainstay. You can stay as you are for the rest of your life, or you can change to the DA. And I think that's the opportunity.
The founding father of Ghana said that Kwame Nkrumah said it's far better to be free to govern or misgovern yourself than to be governed by anybody else. And let me just challenge you on that. Is yes, you guys are being effective in the Western Cape, but the Premier of the Western Cape doesn't seem to respect or at least the dignity of the people that she's delivering to. So as much as, yes, I hear you saying, yes, you've got water, but how does that then translate to dignity?
Look, I think that the tweet that Mr. Le put out was ill-advised, and I certainly don't agree with it. I think it was a wrong analysis. But let me say that Helen Zille has done more for liberating people of South Africa and bringing freedom and democracy than many people sitting on the ANC benches today. This is a woman who looked after and harbored senior ANC MPs today that sit on those benches in her house, hid them from their apartheid police. This is the lady who exposed the lie behind Steve Biko's murder. I really think judging somebody's whole career and their contribution to South Africa by a single ill-advised tweet, I think is an unfair reflection. I think the ANC have far more to answer in this regard than anything that Helen Zille has.
Except we're doing the same. We're doing the same for Jacob Zuma, who has been part of the struggle for a lot longer than his disastrous administration, no?
Yeah, well, I would agree. He's been given the same opportunity that Helen Zille has to deliver and to govern. She succeeded and he has failed.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, John, for joining us, and all the best with your petition. Let's see what happens next.
Thank you. Make sure you sign it and get it back to us as quickly as possible.
You'll have to convince me a little more,
John. It's been a real privilege to be with you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. All right, well, that's it. Conversation with John Steenhuisen, the Chief Whip of the Democratic Alliance in the National Assembly. Should South Africa have an early election? Well, I don't know, man. I'm still worried about the peace in the country. I don't know what it's going to achieve. They seem to know something that we don't. Let's just wait and see. Will I sign the petition? I don't know. The question is, will you? I'm out of here. Cheers.
This is CliffCentral.com.